This week on Art of the Air features Executive Director for the Porter County Museum, Kevin Pazer, discussing its mission. Next, we have the publishers and editors of the Michiana Arts Magazine, Panoply, Dan Breen and Cynthia Davis, discussing their quarterly publication. Our spotlights on Family Folklore Foundation's Meg DeMakis, discussing her new book, Millennia of Progress, the Chicago World's Fair, If Houses Could Talk.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. We'd like to welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight. She's been with us many times before talking about all the wonderful things that the Family Folklore Foundation is doing. And this one's going to be a new book, but it's also connected to some performances. Meg DeMakis is coming back here. Again, it's about the World's Fair homes. And she's penned a new book about that. And so she's going to try it. Meg, thank you for coming back to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thank you for inviting me.
Hi, Meg.
Hi.
Hey, Meg. So what was that initial spark that got you interested in the Century of Progress homes? Was there a particular moment that you went, wow, I really want to know more about this?
Well, actually, it was my late great brother, Dan Granfield, who put together an article for the Indiana Historical Society about how did those houses go from the fair to Beverly Shores. He was a landscape architect and worked at Chester, and it was just something that always bugged him. And he wrote something that is very nice, but it's so technical that it's hard for people to understand. So I wanted to break it down for everybody.
Wonderful.
How we did our project.
And in the past, you tell us a little bit. I know we talked about this in our previous shows. You actually did a performance at IUN, and tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, the mission of Family Folklore is to offer experiential experience learning activities to people of all ages. And that year, we selected the 1933 World's Fair for mainly the houses that came to Beverly Shores. But then we started learning about the actual fair, and it was so amazing that we kind of broke it down to the different exhibits and different people. I wanted them to write this time. You know, that's what my forte is. And so we had about 25 people online, and they wrote about different exhibits. They also recorded their voices, and we gave this presentation at Main Stage Theater at IUN, which seats 500, and they let us put a PowerPoint on the back wall, which was just wonderful, of the fair and the houses. And then we had people in the group that dressed like the tugboat that came, that brought the barge over. And yeah, and we had a gal, Rebecca Swerden, dressed up as Barbie to do the Florida house. And we used nylon kids tents. We got the idea from the Barbie doll dream house, which is what they called the Florida house. And so they were selling it in Hammaker and Schlimmer. And I'm like, that's it. Because we were trying to build the houses for the stage, and it was like impossible. So we just bought the tents. And then we also had a puppet show, because the houses are in the Indiana Dunes National Park. And so we have all these darling woodland puppets that were, and it was right near Earth Day. And they were talking to the audience about global warming and don't throw your trash away, you know, that kind of thing.
Very good. So was the book always part of this whole project or did one evolve into the other?
It was mainly going to be a project, but when we started getting books about the World's Fair, they kept showing us guidebooks, you know, and books that, you know, and so that's what this, I call this a companion book or a guidebook for our project and what we learned. So I kind of used that idea. And then I always wanted to have a coffee table book, you know, like on Seinfeld. This one does not have legs, but... But so I have it in paperback on Amazon, but I also have hardback, which is on sale at a variety of gift shops around here. The Press in Valpo, the Munster Performing Arts Center gift shop, Beverly Shores. That's just a few to mention. I probably have some more if I think hard. And so I'm getting the word out, and I feel like my brother Dan is glad because he wanted the world to get the word to get out. What was the coolest thing was four houses that weighed too much for a truck. They came over one at a time on a barge pushed by a tugboat. And they were either put up on the dune or they were unassembled and put up on the dune and reassembled. And two of them weighed more than the space shuttle. And so, you know, it was just interesting. And, you know, the fair was very large, 430 acres. It was from the planetarium all the way down to the Science and Industry Museum along the shore.
Right.
And then they built an island, Northerly Island, out of the ashes of the 1871 Chicago Fair. And so it was called the Century of Progress because Chicago had been incorporated into a city 100 years before that.
Right.
And so I actually have IU students that are writing, even right now, that's their assignment. They are writing about how things have changed in our 100 years.
Okay.
So that's why I call it Millennia of Progress.
So, Meg, with all your knowledge about the homes, which house would you be happy living in?
Well, we pretended like we were the houses.
Right.
My monologue was the House of Tomorrow. And, you know, it had 12 sides. It was all windows. It had a port for airplanes. You know, it had everything. It was the first air conditioned central heat and electrified building. And that I thought that was pretty cool.
In our last few moments, where can they find the book? You had the book launch, I think, on Boston, November 2nd. But where can they find the book real quickly in our last few moments here, Meg?
In Valpo at the Press, at Beverly Shores in their gift shop. And at the Munster Performing Arts Center in their gift shop.
Very good. That was Meg Demakis from Family Folklore Foundation and her new book, Millennia Progress, 1933 to 2023, the Chicago World's Fair, If Houses Could Talk. Thank you so much for coming on Art on the Air Spotlight and sharing your new book.
Yes, yeah, nice seeing you, Meg.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by McCauley Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
This is Clay Jenkinson for Listening to America, and you are listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM and WVLP 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Kevin Matthew Pazer to Art on the Air. Kevin is the executive director of the Porter County Museum in Valparaiso, Indiana. He has had a passion for Porter County history since high school, with an internship at the Old Jail Museum. In college, there were more internships in Indianapolis and Chicago, satisfying his love of history and increasing his skills in facility management and fundraising. He started his tenure at the Porter County Museum in 2008. In April, he was named official Porter County historian by the Indiana Historical Society and the Indiana Historical Bureau. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Kevin. It's really, really nice meeting you.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, Kevin, what we like our people that come on the show, our guests, to tell a little bit about their background, their origin story. You know, and I met you, of course, at the opening of the exhibit there, and then I thought you might be a great guest. But your audience wants to know your origin story, how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Kevin.
Absolutely. Well, I spent the first 8 years of my life in Whiting, Robertsdale, and my family moved here in 1993. And I have essentially grown up here. I graduated from high school at Washington Township High School. And it's really where I began my love for local history and was very fortunate to be able to embrace that in school and had a focused credit to be an intern at the time when the school had the block scheduling system and was able to connect with what was then known as the Old Jail Museum. I was totally unaware of its existence. I have spent the better part of my career now hearing that same thing, even though technically we're not in the Old Jail anymore, but was able to volunteer. I was the first intern, paid intern, thanks to the John W. Anderson Foundation in the museum's history, and just got involved in every facet that I could. And when I went away to school in Crawfordsville, Indiana, at Wabash College, I ended up still coming home frequently to help with the different things going on here at the museum. And in some ways, I've never left and had a great opportunity while I was at Wabash to become an intern for the Indiana State Museum. Actually, technically a double intern, both on the facilities management side and for the State Museum's foundation at the time, so the fundraising side of things, and just realized that that was a really important part of museum work. You know, you can't have, but a totally necessary part of it. And I just fell in love with that process because it's certainly both a combination of art and science to raise the money that you need to do the things that you need to do to make, in this case, Porter County a better place, but to hopefully enrich the lives of the people who come in to visit. But after that point in time in school, when I was an intern at the State Museum, I took that experience and I used that to become an intern at the Field Museum in Chicago. And absolutely loved it. I think I had a smile on my face the entire summer. And again, with something that was maybe somewhat non-traditional at the time, is I was a focused prospect research intern, which is a fundamental part of the fundraising process. And they ended up having me back the next summer as a contractual employee to continue the work. And not terribly long after, the opportunity came up to become the director of the Porter County Museum. And really, the rest is history. I've been involved with this museum for more than half of my life now, and it's an honor, and there's a lot of great work to be done here.
So, Kevin, can you describe what a typical day is like, and what are your responsibilities? Do you develop the programming, or so can give us a view of what your days are like?
The greatest thing about this work, as far as I'm concerned, is that no 2 days are ever the same. And I think especially so in a small museum setting, you know, looking back on my experiences in Indianapolis and Chicago, my days were very much structured, the same work day in, day out, and which was a good thing. I mean, it was very enjoyable work. But here, you just never know what's going to happen. And in the case right now, our focus is very much on sustaining the work we're doing. I had mentioned just a moment ago that we're no longer in the Old Jail Museum. We made the jump from there to the facility we're in at 20 Indiana Avenue in downtown Valparaiso back in 2022. With a collaboration and an exhibit that was part of a larger series that was shepherded by the Field Museum. So in some ways, it was sort of a homecoming for me, and we jumped at the opportunity to work with them to do that. But this building, far more suited to be a museum from the accessibility standpoint, the climate control standpoint, presents a whole interesting slate of possibilities. And again, when I say it, I really mean it. No 2 days are ever truly the same.
So what are you fielding, though? I mean, are you coming up with the ideas for the exhibits?
So it's very much a team-based approach. I've got a really wonderful small staff. Jake Just is our director of exhibits and publications, and he is our chief designer. And Quinn Albert, if you come to visit, most likely you'll interact with Quinn, who has a history background, graduated from Valparaiso University. Actually, both Jake and Quinn both graduated from Valparaiso University. We work together to make those decisions, and we're governed by a board of trustees. We're also a public-private partnership in conjunction with Porter County government. So we work very closely with the Porter County commissioners as well. And all of it sort of works together to make this museum move forward.
So I'm wondering also then, do you have a personal artistic discipline? Do you write? Are you a secret painter?
I wish I had that talent. So in school, I studied art history because I don't have the physical ability to do it. Now, my brother, on the other hand, and my mom, and to an extent, my dad, all have a gift of the physical talent of being able to create artwork in many forms. I essentially don't have that ability. And so I appreciate people who do. So I spent a lot of time studying and taking in the talent of others, and hence why I was, I believe, the third art history major in the history of Wabash College, appreciating all of the great works being created by the students and of course, for artists over many, many years.
Your current exhibit, and that's where I came out to the opening of, was about the electric trains of Porter County. I'm not sure I got the name correct, but that's the gist of it. And I'm from the next county over, but I was totally unaware that that type of thing existed. But maybe tell us a little bit about that current exhibit, which is running through April, but I think you can tell us what's that all about and you know what Absolutely. Prompted you to do it?
Well, it's an incredible story, and it's honestly been one on our short list for a long time. It's one that's just on the cusp of living memory. And the premise of this is that, at least for our portion of this story in Porter County, knowing that concurrently and actually even before us in both LaPorte and Lake counties, there were established electric train systems. And really, our story begins in this larger story when we realized we could be a point of connection to this larger Chicago, New York electric airline project that was essentially wanting to create a quicker trip from Chicago to New York. Our line was known as Valparaiso Northern because our role in this was essentially bringing people from here north to Chesterton, which was very much the hub to connect to these other existing systems in the adjacent counties. One of the things in telling this story locally, because for years we've come across pieces in our collection, mainly written histories talking about stories connected to the line, some really great pictures from different snapshots in time, knowing this thing ran between 1910 and 1938. But I was shocked to find in this initial research of really putting together the full story to develop it into the exhibit that anybody can come for free during our public hours to see, is that electric railroads were the fifth largest industry in the United States at this point in time in the early 20th century. And so knowing we were a big part of connecting people to this larger system, to me, is really cool.
And so how did you get the materials for it? I know I saw a lot of it, but a lot of it's photography and things, and it took up quite a bit of space. But how did you gather that material? Where did you source that?
So some of which is from our permanent collection. One of the things people probably don't realize coming into the museum is there's a great area hiding in plain sight where we have collection storage in very much a state-of-the-art way. We were able to develop it knowing we had some constraints with space here. We're in about a 3,000 square foot building. We looked at the possibility of doing condensed storage, and in doing so, we're able very cleverly to create a system that allows us to store three times as much in a square footage based on not needing fixed aisleways. And a lot of museums do this type of storage. And for us, it was very much a necessity. But we were able to work with a number of other institutions locally, Serena Art at the Westchester Township History Museum, Daniel Adams at the LaPorte County Historical Society Museum, and a number of other private collectors and rail enthusiasts. And we're really able to collaborate locally to pull all of these things together to illustrate this great story that spanned between 1910 and 1938.
So is that a typical run for your exhibits like that? I mean, or do you have like a kind of a, I call it default exhibit thing that exists, or like for example, this one's running from through April. So, and I think 2 months prior, so like 6 months, do you look for like 6 month exhibits, or, you know, how does your general schedule work out?
We typically do. So there are essentially three public galleries at the Porter County Museum. There is the Robert King Gallery, which is the smallest of the three. And typically, we rotate that out about 3 to 4 times a year. And that tends to be our more art-focused exhibits, knowing there's a lot that we're doing and have been in the last decade to talk about historical Porter County art and artists. We actually have a pretty big show coming up that'll take the place of the Montague Urschel Gallery, which is where the Valparaiso Northern exhibit is right now. We tend internally to call that our featured exhibit gallery. And an exhibit within that space will typically have a 6 to 8 month run and is a more curated story. And so in the case right now, we're telling this really wonderful story about this electric rail line that existed here. But in May of 2025, we'll be telling the story of the Hennells, Vin and Hazel Hennell, who were really incredibly known local artists, but with national significance. And we're working with a number of other great local institutions to tell this story. And so that'll be front and center in that gallery. The third gallery is essentially in between those two. And it's the Eunice Slagle Gallery, and that's where we focus, at least as of right now, telling stories about different objects in our collection through the framework of an exhibit we call Connections, which is essentially different pairings of artifacts, and we use the artifacts to sort of show comparative stories or similarities, but also, in some cases, contrasting elements of the artifacts. And it gives us a great framework to be able to, at any given time, change up pairings, knowing we have over 20,000 different artifacts in our permanent collection.
So, Kevin, on your Saturday museum guided tours, what does that entail and how long does that go? Is that a year-round guided tour?
We do. We have a standing free guided tour on Saturdays at 2 o'clock. We use it more as a highlights tour, so it's not necessarily a comprehensive tour of everything that's on exhibit. Now, on occasion, we've had some people come in and wanting to know more, and in that case, we certainly indulge and share as much as people want to hear. But for the most part, we try to keep the focus tour to about a half an hour to 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. There's no RSVP for it, so anybody can just show up. All we do is ask that people who want to come a tour come a few minutes before start time as a courtesy to our other guests. But it's really a nice way. I say that depending on who you get as a tour guide, no two tours are the same. Quinn has been great at leading these tours. On occasion, I will jump in and lead a tour. And we sort of have a rotating cast of characters, all of which focus on different elements. And I say, if you want to hear a story that's not on an exhibit label, come to one of our tours. You won't be disappointed.
Are you ever a surprise tour host?
I am. In fact, I do that on occasion. I'd like to think about once a month I jump in. And it's just, we like to keep people guessing. And no tour is a bad experience. It's always a lot of fun. And it's a great way to learn more about what we have on display.
So that's that, you just don't have to RSVP. You just show up on your hours. Which, what are your hours, by the way?
So we are open 6 days a week. We have free admission. We're open Tuesday through Sunday from 11 until 5. And often we have special hours. And if you go to our website, pocomuse.org, P-O-C-O-M-U-S-E.org, you can see our full calendar for the quarter. And in some cases, from larger events, it'll be placed on there much more in advance. But you get a sense, like we've got things coming up, specialty hours, where we're either open late or open early. So it's always worth going to visit, and it's very easy and free to go to pocomuse.org, P-O-C-O-M-U-S-E.org.
And we'll hit that again at the end of the interview, too.
Wonderful. Yes.
So do you have, recently there was the Old City Cemetery gathering.
Yes.
Do you have other outside events, and do you do the cemetery more than just for the holiday, or do you do that throughout the year?
Like, we typically do at least one public tour per quarter. Mm-hmm. Now, the first quarter of the year is always dicey just because weather is an unknown. One of the other things that we've had great success here in the last few years doing quarterly is a focused living history program. And we have a great batch of reenactors.
Ian Baker,
I don't know if you've ever had a chance to interact with him, but there are the most serious, dialed-in history enthusiasts and living historians that I've ever had the pleasure of working with. And they focus on so many different eras. And recently, they interpreted the Grand Army of the Republic, which was the veterans group that followed the American Civil War. But they've been out and have focused on civilian life. They've focused on military life and pretty much everything in between. So that and the guided public tours are really a cornerstone of public programming. We, this past quarter, you had mentioned the Old City Cemetery, which is a favorite just because it's an incredibly old public cemetery in Porter County, and it really is a who's who of people who helped found Porter County. But we added one we had never done before, and I was thrilled to do so. It's a place I've wanted to go and focus in on, and we'll be doing it again, but it's the Adams Cemetery in Morgan Township, so unincorporated Valparaiso, and another incredible who's who of people who made this county possible that we owe a lot to in the present day. And so my hope is here into the next year that we continue throughout Porter County to focus on different cemeteries, but also to look at neighborhood walks and other focused public history tours.
How far out in advance do you plan your exhibits? I know you said you had some, but like, and also part of that same question is, what are you looking for that you haven't done for the museum?
That's a really good question. One of the things I feel that's helped us in the development process is the stability now of being here at 20 Indiana Avenue for the last 2+ years. We've really started to get into a rhythm and a schedule. Ideally, we'd like to be a few years out in our development, and at this point, we're just about a year and a half out of just sort of the broad brushstrokes of what stories do we want to tell. And that's actually a good secondary question, as we've been looking at what other stories are worth telling. And also, how can we work with other institutions and other groups to tell those stories? And personally, I'm thrilled with this next follow-up, the development to tell the Hinnell story, that I just feel like they deserve all the credit in the world. They, for me, were the impetus for the arts community here, and it's paying dividends in the present day to see that concentration still here in North Porter County. But throughout all of Porter County and regionally speaking, I think is really great. So there's a lot coming, and I'm excited to look at what the next stories we're going to be telling. I hope you'll have me back at some point to talk about some of those things.
Well, you know, you choose the right person to focus on, and you will develop, you know, you want those younger people to become interested and excited about history. And so that's your job, to tell that story in such a compelling, interesting way that you developed your next generation of history lovers.
Absolutely.
So it's a big responsibility.
No. And you know, you bring up a really funny thing, and it's one I've thought about a lot more now. You know, I made the joke at the beginning of this interview that I've been doing this for more than half of my life. The involvement here, spoiler alert, I am not going to live forever. And so I want to make certain that there's a next generation of people who love this work and can take my place and can take the torch and can continue to tell incredible Porter County stories as a result.
So does the Porter County Museum have an internship like you had, giving some young person an opportunity to work with you?
We do. In fact, that's something I'm very proud of. The last several years, we've developed a focused summer internship where we pay interns, and it's highly competitive as a result. But if you visit our website, pocomuse.org, P-O-C-O-M-U-S-E.org, there's a tab for internships, and you can review what the specifications are, when to apply. And it's something that's just taken on a life of its own. And we're very proud of the people who have come through. We've had some really incredible interns through the program.
And as a follow-up to that, do you have other volunteer opportunities, you know, in our last moments here?
We do.
And also development opportunities, people contributing.
Yes. So we most certainly have volunteer opportunities. They're very much project-based. It's not the standard way that I think museums have done things over time. That's another thing that you can go to our website to see what different projects we have going, to see if you have some interest in helping us see these things through. And of course, there is always an opportunity to contribute to support our work. We couldn't do it without our donors. And that's a simple thing you can do, whether you visit the website, as I've said before, pocomuse.org, P-O-C-O-M-U-S-E.org. In this case, /donate. But I'd prefer you come in for a visit, you see the museum first, you experience what we're doing. And if you feel so inclined, make a gift when you're here on site.
That sounds great. Where's your location again, real quick, in our last few moments here, Kevin?
20 Indiana Avenue in downtown Valparaiso.
Very good. And you've given the website enough that I think everyone's going to know it, but there will be a link on our website that when they click on your
Wonderful.
Picture, it'll take
kind
you there.
Kind of like right between both courthouses.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's really, we say it's at the intersection of art and history.
Yeah, well, that's a great saying. That's Kevin Pazer. He's the executive director for the Porter County Museum. And stop by and see the wonderful exhibits they have there and all the upcoming things. Thank you so much for coming on Art on the Air.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Very nice meeting you.
Likewise. I hope you're able to come and see what we're doing here.
Art on the Air listeners, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest on our show? Whether it's an artist, musician, author, gallery, theater, concert, or some other artistic endeavor that you are aware of, or a topic of interest to our listeners. Email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. We'd like to thank you for listening to Art on the Air. Our show relies on the support of not only our show underwriters, but also our listeners who make donations to this station. Your support of this station will ensure Art on the Air may continue bringing you the best of the arts and culture programming for Northwest Indiana and beyond. If Art on the Air is important to you, please consider supporting this station with a one-time contribution or even making an ongoing sustaining contribution. For information on how to make a contribution, go to this station's website or our show website, breck.com/AOTA. And thank you. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts.
This is Curtis L. Chrysler, Poet Laureate of Indiana, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We are happy to welcome Dan Breen and Cynthia Davis to Art on the Air. Dan is the editor and publisher of Panoply Magazine, and Cynthia is the co-editor. Panoply Magazine publishes stories, poetry, articles, and art by the residents of Michiana. They began publishing in August of 2019. The magazine highlights the everyday excellence of the communities, and they strive to explore the unique heritage and diversity of the region. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Cynthia and Dan. It's very wonderful seeing you again.
Good to see you. It's good to be here.
Well, we enjoy having you there. It's a pleasure meeting you. I know Esther met you at the Midwest Museum of Modern Art, but we want to kind of share your background story, your what I call your origin story, and we're going to start with you, Dan. I always say how you got from where you were to where you are now, and then we'll jump to Cynthia, and then we'll move on to other things about the magazine and your purpose and everything like that. So, Dan, you're first up.
Wow. So thanks, Larry. We really appreciate being here today. Very exciting. You know, I guess the magazine started or the idea for the magazine started back when I was a college student at IUSB many years ago. Some friends and I published at first a small trifold magazine called Mao Mao. And we only put out two or three issues of that. It was very small trifold and had a lot of fun doing that. Pushing it around to different places in a very small way back when zines were very popular. And we moved to a publication called Blind Iguana Press. Blind Iguana Press, we probably only put out 10 issues, but it was a larger type zine filled with poetry and art and short stories. And then got to a point in my college career where I had to decide, was I going to do that or graduate? And since I'd already invested quite a bit in college, I thought I might go ahead and graduate. From there, you know, life gets busy and things happen. Took a couple jobs. It worked a lot. And then I took some jobs that maybe I thought I would be working less or it'd be less intense. And it never really happened until around 2017, 2018. Finally began to get some space and time in my life thinking about, boy, I sure would like to do that again. I sure would like to promote art, writing, and creativity in the Michiana area. And so began to develop the idea of Panoply Story and Art Michiana. My family and I sat around and we voted on a name. I can't remember what the other name choices were, but they decided Panoply was the best thing to call it. Panoply means a collection. So we are a collection of story and art in Michiana. Eventually, was it through a Facebook post maybe, Cindy, or through an acquaintance? Cindy and I kind of bumped into each other. And Cindy, I'll let you take it from there.
I have a question for you, Dan, back to Mau Mau. What was that also stories and poetry? And so have all the magazines been the same?
So it was just a trifold. And it was just short poems that my my good friend Tony and I wrote together.
So has that been your basic principle is poetry, like throughout all your background and stories? Does it include stories or mostly poetry?
With poetry that we were writing at the time, I don't know if it was any good or not. Thinking back on it, it probably wasn't. But yeah, it kind of began there. And it is a big part of the magazine is, you know, the poetry, the short stories, the essays, and, you know, really help. I think the art really helps support that. I think that people pick up the magazine because there's a great looking cover. There's some killer piece of art on there created
in
Michiana.
It's so true.
Yeah, you notice it and you're like, man, I want to pick that up. But I think you pick it up and you're like, oh, great art. But then you read that poem or that short story and it touches your heart. We really try. I at one point I told Cindy, we really want to have poetry that creates an emotional syntax for people and helps connect them to something somebody's thinking and really kind of, I want to say pulls at their heartstring, but really moves them in a way with words and language. And I think we want that in our short stories and our essays and our articles about people who are living and doing great things in Michiana, creating art in Michiana. We really want to help people connect to that. And I don't want to say inspire them, but maybe inspire them to go to an art show or go to a poetry reading or go do something that might be outside their normal that they might not normally do.
Yeah, the quality of the writing, it's just excellent. It's a really gem of a magazine.
Cynthia, we kind of want to move on and give you a chance to tell about your origin story, how you got from where you were to where you are now, and then how you sort of molded into becoming part of the Panoply family.
Okay. Well, I started writing little stories and little poems when I was about 10 years old. It was sort of encouraged by my dad. And then I went on to, in high school, I was in a couple plays. And then in college, I majored in English. And as soon as I got into freshman in college, I ran into John Keats and his poetry, and I've always been in love with it ever since, like that. So pretty much stayed with the English major, graduated with bachelor's, went ahead and got a master's at Northwestern, and also a PhD in English from Notre Dame. So it's all about poetry for me. My PhD is in poetry, okay? So quite a few years went by, and then I sort of sometimes tried to do writing and sometimes gave up on it. I published a few poems, published a little bit of fiction, and but it was really a struggle. But I taught English in college for about 30 years. So then, actually not 30, but a lot of years, lots of papers graded. And then I got involved in the Wild Rose Moon Performing Arts Center in Plymouth, Indiana, who was started by George Schricker about 8 years ago. And he picked up a flyer at where Dan works about this man wanting to start this magazine, and handed it, George handed it to me. And I called up Dan Breen and said, let's get together. And that's when it happened. So that was maybe April 2019, I think. Or was it a year before that? I don't remember. But anyway.
And this is sort of off the cuff, but do you each have a poem that you could possibly read?
I, as a matter of fact, came prepared with something and was hoping you'd ask that. And I would like to read from our latest magazine, the fall issue of Panoply was 2024. And this is by Tom Rosenbluth. Tom is our featured poet. And we have featured artists. We don't have a theme for the magazine. We really want each artist to shine, and we want each artist to bring their own unique talent, and we combine that together to make a beautiful magazine. And this is called Leave Taking by Tom Rosenbluth. I hate to leave this beautiful place, my father said before he died. I thought he meant the house with the sleeping porch by the lake. But maybe he meant this earth, the way the wind moves through the leaves, like a girl brushing her hair, diamonds of water on the smooth shoulders of swimming children, a faithful dog wagging and greeting, the sound of a stream rippling and giggling over rocks, a field of sunflowers smiling to the sky, fresh baked bread, the curves of a beloved woman, the trusting weight of a sleeping child, hummingbirds, clouds sailing before the wind, moving away from us, out over the green blue sea, like free floating spirits released from the pull of gravity.
Wow. Do you and Cynthia, are you the ones who choose the poets?
Yeah, so we work together. We take submissions for all kinds of writing and art at panoplymichiana@gmail.com, and people will submit to us. And I'll read them. I usually get them, and then I'll send them on to Cindy to see what her thoughts are. And we have some brief conversation back and forth as to how we feel about publishing them. It's really amazing. I mean, I think when I read this poem for the first time, I may be sitting, here at my desk or how you watch TV but don't watch TV, and you're looking at your phone and an email will pop up, and wow, all of a sudden I'm reading a poem that just is mind-blowing.
It transports you.
Yeah, maybe I was only the first or second person to read this or after it was written, and it's really kind of a special feeling. It's just amazing. I would say one of the great things about our magazine is it's hard to get in two different magazines. It's hard for writers to get published. I think, and especially if you don't have any free work. Well, it's not impossible to get published at Panoply. We want to get Michiana residents out there writing. We want to see people getting writing. And starting this year, we're increasing our distribution to 5,000. So somebody who writes, gets published in Panoply, or has their art shown in Panoply, is going to be seen by over 5,000 people. Plus, they're on our website, and we have a great following on our website. So lots of people come and read and see what's there.
So, Cynthia, did you find one of your poems by any chance?
No, I didn't.
Well, then we'll go back to Dan. Dan, you said you had a second one that you'd like to read for us.
Oh, I can. Well, I don't know that I have a second one. I can read another poem by Dan Breen, A Pro Tip for Walking. When walking in the woods in the fall, if you spend too much time looking above your head, up at the foliage, golden, red, orange, sun shining at an angle through the remaining green, coloring the world chlorophyll, or peering out at the changing vista reflected upon a pond, cattails unraveling in the breeze, you will likely trip over the roots and find yourself splayed upon the path, pulled forward by the dogs, 4 feet trot right over the dangers to your balance. Thank you.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Now, is it, you also, do you have room for short stories? Like, let's say I've never seen a panoply. How many pages are there in a regular issue? And then you have room for short stories or maybe like a serialized thing besides poetry?
Yes. We publish, so each issue, we're going to be running 32 pages this year.
Oh, wow.
And so each issue will have a featured artist. This is generally an artist that we find out somewhere throughout the course of the year. We'll be making selections for some of those artists coming this December 1st. We're meeting as a team this December 1st. You may want to edit that out. I apologize. So we have a featured artist. We have two or three articles that we write. And yes, we always are looking for people to write articles to. These are paid a small stipend. We have a short story, poetry, and then we have some other artists that we publish that are that kind of bring their own talent and their own writing into the mix.
So, Cynthia, can you give us a sort of a snapshot of what your collaboration works, like how you put the magazine together, how you and Dan work together?
Well, pretty much we sort of intuit each other's preferences. I can remember one night, it was about 4 in the morning, and I was finishing my poem, and he texted me at the instant I finished that poem. He said, is your poem ready yet? So to give you an idea of, we work together sort of intuitively, and we work together pretty much in sync with each other. And this has been going on since like May or June 2019, so 5 years. So, yeah, he just sends me poems, emails me poems. We don't have a whole lot of contact because he's very busy at his job and I'm busy at mine and so forth. But I don't know, I think the way art works, you know, it's the way poetry and art works. It's like, oh, this is wonderful, is usually it.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM on WVLP 103.1 FM.
Well, speaking about the art, so what goes into choosing your cover artist? Is that
Dan
from
usually
submission
pretty
or
much covers it? Yeah, Dan pretty much chooses the cover art and the art. I don't do that so much. I mostly work more with the writing side of things.
Nice.
Yeah, great question. So I'm looking, we publish across Michiana. So I'm really looking to see artists from different areas of Michiana. Right, our next artist, Alan Larkin, which will come out January 17th, 2025, is from South Bend. But we want to see somebody from St. Joe, Michigan. We want to see somebody from LaPorte or Michigan City. We want to see people from Goshen and Plymouth. I really want to spread it around. But it's also important that we're hearing the voice of Michiana. So there's a great variety of people who live in Michiana, people of different backgrounds, people from different countries, people from different religions. So we really want to do our best to hear all those voices and hear all those things. For the cover artist, though, we really want to see an artist with a good depth of content. So we see a lot of work that there's a deep, that they have a deep history of their art, that we want to see a developmental path. And, you know, we want to see something attention grabbing. We want to see something that when people see it, they're going to go, oh, wow. That's
Let me
really
pick up
something.
That magazine.
Yeah, exactly. Wow, look at that. What is that? I've never seen anything like that before. Wow, that's really pulling me in. And so that is a big deal. It is a big consideration that people want to see that.
In your visual arts selection, though, both inside the magazine, what are you looking for in terms of the things? Photography, obviously it's photography of the artwork, but give me kind of a range of what you might be looking for.
So we have published this past issue. For the fall issue, we published a ceramics artist, Catherine Schmidt. We have published photographers. We have published oil painters. We have published all kinds of different artists. We really try to keep a mix of. I'll tell you why I try to keep a mix of 3D. Once I was at Fire Arts in downtown South Bend, I walked in with our card. We've been publishing since 2019, and we started as a web page. So we used to have these little postcards we passed out all over the place and mailed, and that got people to go to the web page. I was down at Fire Arts, and I gave the director a card. I said, "Hey, this is who we are. Can I leave some cards here?" And he said, "Hey, you know, I looked at your web page." He went back later. He said, "I looked at your web page. You don't have any 3D art." Yeah, you're right. We don't have any 3D arts. So, you know, that caused me to want to, you know, we want to have a little 3D art in each of our magazines. So if we're a cover of 3D art, then we're going to have other art that is more two-dimensional. We want to have artisans. So we've printed Dylan before. Dylan is a ceramics bowl maker out of Goshen, Indiana, and he does beautiful woodworking, a lot of different types.
Kind of touched on this, but what's the range of people that you consider Michiana? You sort of hit on it, but give us kind of a range on that.
Yeah, wider. So I take a very wide view of Michiana. We distribute into Chesterton at the Chesterton Art Center, over into Elkhart, Goshen. Yeah, I know Chesterton's probably just outside what most people would consider Michiana to be, down into Goshen, St. Joseph, Michigan, up along the lakefront, and down into Plymouth and LaPorte. So that's really range.
That's healthy.
Yeah, it's a healthy range, but there are a lot of great artists within that range.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Right. Well, yeah, and who helps you? Oh, yeah, how the kind of the nuts and bolts of it. You put it together. How do you do that? Do you assemble it like with an illustrator or something like that, and then print it? Tell us about just the mechanical process of actually, you know, producing the magazine.
Yeah, so we get all the pieces together. I have the writing of the art coming in from the artist. I work on Affinity Publisher, which is a great. Which is a great publishing system. It goes out to the printer in Milford, Indiana. I pick it up, and Cindy and I spend some time running it around to our hundreds and hundreds of distribution partners throughout the area. You can find where to get a physical copy of the magazine at panoplymichiana.com. And in there's a running bar there that if you click on it, it will show you our top sites in each of the areas.
Excellent.
That's great. And so we're getting in our final moments here, but I just want to give you a chance to say some of those locations. I mean, you can find it, but some of the prime locations you can pick up the magazine. And your target audience is obviously people in Michiana, but are you thinking of ever expanding outside of that?
Boy, let me start with the last one first. Sure, ideally, the magazine would grow outside of the Michiana area. As Cindy said earlier, we're both very busy. We hold full-time jobs beyond this. And so that day will come when it comes. I've always thought this is a slow-growing business, and we'll go as we go. Top spots to get it, I want to call out Wild Rose Moon in Plymouth, the Midwest Museum of American Art in Elkhart, Indiana. You can get it down at the Century Center, also at the South Bend Museum of Art, Lubesnik, the Krazzle up in St. Joe, Michigan are kind of probably some of the top spots. And, of course, the Chesterton Art Center. Stop by and let Hannah Hammond Hagman know that we said hi.
Is it available digitally?
It is available digitally at panoplymichiana.com. And that's P-A-N-O-P-L-Y, Michiana.com.
And if you're interested in submitting, do you have any, if they go to your website, criteria, just kind of guidelines of what to submit?
Sure. We don't have a lot of criteria on submission, but on the upper right-hand corner of the website, there is a submission button, and it explains some of the submission guidelines. As I said earlier, you know, we're here to show the art of individuals, and you know, we want that individual art to shine. So people often ask me, what's the theme this quarter? And we do not have themes. We kind of bring together the art in a cohesive way that kind of complements each other for that issue. And we put it out there as it is and let each artist shine.
Yeah, I think your biggest submission thing is the 500 words or less.
And we are not strict on that. I think this next issue we're publishing a short story that's 2,000 words.
Oh, all right.
Well, that opens. Yeah, so a great story is a great story, and we'll find a way to make it happen.
Right. Well, we're in our last few moments here. Tell us once again how you can find you online, submissions, emails, Facebook, and all those type of social media.
Sure. You can find us on Facebook at Panoply Michiana. Also, our email address is panoplymichiana@gmail.com, and Panoply is P-A-N-O-P-L-Y, and we're at panoplymichiana.com.
Excellent. And you also, if people see your pictures on our website, you click on it and it'll take you to that website and it'll link you directly to that. Dan Breen, he's the publisher and editor of Panoply, along with Cynthia Davis, the co-editor. We appreciate you coming on Art of the Air and sharing not only your art journey, but the wonderful mission that you're doing in Michiana.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure learning more about the magazine.
Coming next week on Art in the Air, our whole show features a focus on the Chesterton Art Center, first with local artist, sculptor, and single dad, Billy Pazzo, and his artist daughter, Polly Pazzo, discussing their unique art exhibit. Next, the new education director, Kara Schmidt, discusses classes at the Art Center. Our spotlights on the first exhibit at the Art Center with executive director, Hannah Hammond-Hagman, plus other events in the new year. We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art in the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And for WVLP, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.